What happens when two...
I found this adoption agency.
...turns into five.
She comes with two younger siblings.
In an instant.
Three kids?
And one?
From the creators of Daddy's Home.
We might have a little bit of a knack for this.
Oh, no!
I beg to differ.
...comes Instant Family, the feel-good movie for everyone.
Everything's gonna be okay.
Thanks, Daddy.
Starring Mark Wahlberg.
Should we give them a kiss goodnight?
You guys are overthinking this.
Rose Byrne and Octavia Spencer. Instant Family. In cinemas February 14. Certificate 12A. Book tickets now.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Medium Matters. I'm your host, Chantel, and I have my lovely bestie here with me, Miss Marie Rose.
Hello.
Hello, lovely. How are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm good.
So as a recap, friends, I just want to remind everyone that my little buddy is injured. And not too long ago, she took a little spill during basketball tryouts, I think is the story we're telling.
Totally.
Yes. Something real superhero like is what transpired.
Well, Wonder Woman took all my good material.
Right.
So.
That'd be what an ish. So my little friend is feeling better and we're really rooting for her recovery. So everybody send your love and light this way. So her little bone heals just fine and we can do our ghost hunt in a few weeks. Otherwise, I'm going to have a real exhausting night if I got to carry you around.
Yeah, because I might have to Scooby-Doo out of it if a ghost shows up and scares the crap out of me and I got to run.
And if you're riding on my back, like I am proposing, you can kick me and I will run.
Giddy up.
Right. The benefit to that, of course, is that if you're on my back, anybody that's trying to touch me is going to touch you first.
Oh, hell no.
That makes me happy. So my little friend, her wheel is broken, in case you guys don't remember, but she's on the mend and I'm really happy about that.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Before we kick off tonight's episode, I'd like to thank the following mediums for their love and support. Even if I've thanked you before, I'm going to do it again because you guys mean the universe to me. Sean, the love of my life. Dora, my delicious mama. Marie, my eternal bestie and guest host, who is always with me. My puppies, who stay by my side every time I edit and write and dream up what I want to do next. To Diana B. 143, Diana Dora 87, Sergeant MJP Jr., Miss Nicole Garcia, Eye for Beauty, CC 57, Lori, Aurora, Courtney, Nick, Haley, Lily, Sophie, and anyone I may have missed, I sincerely thank each and every one of you from my entire heart because this would not be possible or nearly as fulfilling without each and every one of you. I also want to do something a little different and shout out a few podcasts I'm listening to and subscribing to. I know how much time and dedication goes into each episode and these podcasters do it up in such an amazing way. So if you haven't already, please, please, please check out Don't Break the Oath podcast, Psychic Teachers, Stranger Than, Hillbilly Horror Stories, and History Goes Bump, and Scream Radio. This is a station versus a podcast, but they have a lot of great content if you're into horror like I am. Show these podcasters some love and check out their content if you get a chance. Some other notes that I want to remind you guys of, please don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Media Matters and email me with questions, stories, and all the good stuff you can think of. I have an up and running website in its infancy, but it does have content and you can subscribe to updates and request that I contact you and see what's coming and so much more. So you can check out the site at themediummatters.com. And now you can reach me at my new email address at themedium@themediummatters.com. Also, please don't forget to leave reviews for and subscribe to the show on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, and Stitcher. I absolutely enjoy reading all of those reviews and sharing them with the rest of the mediums. Also, those reviews help others to find the show, and that's what all the hard work is for. So thank you guys. I really, 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 really love you. It is another dark and stormy night.
I think we do this to ourselves.
You know, the stars align. They want us to talk spooky on a dark and stormy night.
Yeah, it always happens like this.
Right. Do you know how many stories I started writing when I was little? And it was a dark and stormy night. I have loved spooky since I was little, like really small. I remember that.
Explains a lot about you. You're welcome.
So yeah, it is seriously another dark and stormy night. We are about to dive into part two of Poltergeists. And in part one, for those of you that don't remember, we were recording and our lamp flickered. And I mean, it was like perfect timing.
Oh, I was so hoping that you were going to look at me and go, what are you looking at? And that it was just my imagination.
No.
It happened.
Yeah, it very much happened. So, yeah, we talked about some good stuff in part one of this show.
Creepy.
Mm-hmm. Real creepy. So some of the things we talked about, just as a reminder for you guys, because, you know, this is part two and we just want to bring everybody up to speed because it's been a week now that you've been missing the Medium Matters. So last week in part one, we were talking about Poltergeist and all the fancy stuff that comes with it. So just to recap, you guys, Poltergeist literally means noisy ghost in German. Are they always noisy? No. Do they always kick, punch, bite,
trip?
No. But they are active little somebodies. They like to do things and move things and touch things and like mischievous.
Mischievous.
Yeah.
That's the way I picture them.
Right.
Mischievous.
They're mischievous. I do remember, and I think I've talked about this, but when I was doing Reiki level one, sometime during that weekend, I still can't remember if it was like first day or second day I came back home and my toothbrush was on the bathtub floor. Like, it's never there. I don't just leave it on the bathtub floor.
Oh, did the dogs knock it off?
No, they don't get in the tub. I have like a little rack, you know, that holds your shampoo and all your stuff in
there. I wouldn't call your rack little, honey.
God, I love you. I have a small shelving device, if you will, in my shower. What a bee.
Okay, so you hang your toothbrush on it.
Okay, yeah. So it's, you know, the little situation where your shampoo and all your junk is. And I sit it up there behind stuff so it doesn't roll off.
Okay.
And that's always been my routine, you know? Like, I'm showering in the morning and brush my fangs and put it there. And got home one of those afternoons, Saturday or Sunday afternoon, and it's, like, on the floor of the bathtub. And three of my perfume bottles, I think I told you that, there's like nine of them sitting on the top of my bureau, and they're like three rows of three, and the three on the left side of each row were turned outward, which, like, why would anybody bother? But it's stuff that's noticeable.
Someone's
it's like,
trying to get
it's
your
like attention.
Attention
getting. Yeah,
right.
Exactly. So I was like, how convenient that the weekend I'm doing my Reiki one, you decide that you want to come bother me. Right?
Right.
Nobody touched me. I had a niche on my arm. Don't freak out. I just rubbed my arm.
Well, we also have a rogue mosquito in the room.
No, I don't think it's a mosquito. I think it's a moth.
Oh, okay.
No, I was telling Marie, she saw me looking up around the room at something. And she's like, do you see someone in here? I said, yeah, there's a mosquito. And I said, oh, wait, no, it's a moth. So I don't think she believes me, but he's over there now. He's above the door.
Oh, I see him. Yeah.
No, that's a moth. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this morning I'm like brushing my teeth and I felt this like pain on my shoulder and I look and it was a mosquito. What an a-hole.
Bastages? Yeah. Blood-sucking bastages?
Seriously. So I had to expire him. So that's why now I'm looking. I mean, this moth, when he's in flight, he looks like an enormous mosquito. So that's why the concern.
And whenever I see Chantel start staring off at space, I'm like, oh, good Lord, who's visiting us today?
I know, I do it often. How fun for you that you have a friend like this. I know, that girl.
Well, you never know about you, about us.
No.
Strange things happen.
It's true. It's so crazy. Every
it's
time.
It's what makes us fun.
I know. So back to the subject at hand. So we're talking poltergeist. So you guys remember from last week, we said they make noise, they bite, they punch, they kick, they, I don't know, pinch, and they grab, and they they do a lot of different things. And they, I mean, people have talked about poltergeist in movies, you know, hence the famous movie Poltergeist with Carol Ann and the They're Here and all the stuff. And the clown that chokes Ronnie, or I don't remember the little boy's name.
I don't remember.
Anyway, very cool movie. I like that movie a lot. Only the first one. The other two, I didn't care for those. Not even a little. But at some point, we're going to talk about cursed movies or like haunted movie sets and stuff.
Oh, that's,
and
that one's cursed.
Oh, for sure. That for one's sure. cursed. And I'm not going to get off topic right now, but yeah, that one for sure. So we're definitely going to include what, you know, when they were filming Poltergeist, because what a creep show. Creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
So that aside, you guys, that's like, I think where a lot of people know Poltergeist from, things moving and, you know, they open the kids, the door to the kids' bedroom and there's like stuff whirling around the room and toys, you know, coming to life on their own. So yeah, there's a lot of, you know, Poltergeist is a lot of that stuff. It's, you know, and there's a lot of different theories out there. It could be demonic. It could be teenagers in the home that have telekinetic powers like Carrie. From Stephen King's Carrie, which Marie hasn't seen.
Nope. Scary.
Right. So she had enough and had it out with all of her fellow students at the prom, and she kicked some ass that night.
If it gets scarier than Scooby-Doo, I don't watch it.
Then, yeah, you're not going to like this. But so good. Such a good movie. So that's where, you know, another place where you learn about telekinesis and all that good stuff. So a lot of theories out there. Any of them hardcore proven? Hell no. How do you prove that? There's no way. I mean, the demonic aspect, it being a demon that's causing, you know, the poltergeist activity, it's kind of been debunked because people have done exorcisms and they haven't worked. But do they always work?
No.
I don't know. I don't think so.
When you're dealing with spirit, good or bad, I mean, there's everyone's got an opinion, everyone's got a theory.
Right. Agreed.
It's, you know, do you believe or not?
Yeah.
So
no, I'm with you. So a lot of theories out there, whole lot. So we did cover a couple of different stories, quote unquote true stories that happened. So the one of the first ones we talked about was the Enfield poltergeist in England, and this happened back in 1977. And it takes place with a family, mother Peggy, is that her name?
Yes.
I think it was Peggy, and the four kids. And the activity seemed to center around the second child, Janet, 11 years old. And this is the story that The Conjuring 2 is based off of, with Ed and Lorraine Warren, the demonologists, and they come in and they save the day and all that good stuff. And in real life, the Warrens were there for maybe part of a day, and you know, that was really it. So I don't even know like what role they played just by being there.
Don't you love Hollywood?
I do love Hollywood. So in the story, you know, Janet, she does admit, you know, years later that she and her sister did play with the Ouija board. She, you know, there's no way to know for sure that that's what kicked off the activity. In my Ouija board experienced mind, that's what did it. Like, they conjured up.
It's a pretty good theory.
Yeah. They conjured up the spirit of Bill Wilkins, who used to reside in that home and passed away in the home. And so Janet starts experiencing these different things. Her and her brother experience the chest of drawers in their bedroom moving, and the mom sees it, and they get the neighbor to come take a look at things when they flee the house in a panic, and they call the cops in. One of the cops that was called in said that she witnessed firsthand a chair moving 4 feet from, you know, one spot to another. She checked it for wires. There was no explanation. Different investigators came in and out of the home. They witnessed Janet being, you know, quote unquote, thrown across the room. They witnessed her levitating. They witnessed her firsthand, supposedly speaking, you know, Bill Wilkins speaking through her and, you know, talking about how he died in the house, and his son did validate that occurrence, that story. And so they just had all kinds of activity like that, a lot of knocking in the house. They couldn't identify where it was coming from, the ceilings, the walls, inside, outside. I mean, it was kind of all over the place. And they were tormented for like 2 years. And Janet did say that her and her sister did fabricate some of that. And she did go on to say that it was probably 2% of the activity they fabricated themselves. And it was just to kind of, you know, get a rise out of the investigators, I think is what they said. So is that true? I don't know. There are a lot of people out there that believe that the story was a hoax from beginning to end, and that this was just, you know, childish teenage behaviors.
And what I don't get is, why do you put up with that for 2 years? Get the heck out.
Exactly. Exactly. So it was a circus show for sure in that house. A lot of people in and out, a lot of media, a lot of investigators coming in and out of the house. And everybody had a different story. You know, some people didn't see anything. There were a lot of other people that had personal accounts of things flying at them or flying across the room, or, you know, hearing Janet, or rather Bill Wilkins, speak through Janet. There's a recorded account, I guess, where she, you know, they tested it out and put water in her mouth and had her hold the water in her mouth while Bill Wilkins chose to speak. And he did choose to speak. And, you know, to me, I'm like, if he could do that when she had water in her mouth, why did he need her at all?
Yeah, that still doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-mm, not even a little. So, you know, they were tormented in the house. They were tormented out of the house. There were, you know, they had a hard time in school. They were bullied by people. It was everywhere. It was in the newspapers. They called her like the devil girl or something like that. I mean, it was
so sad.
Yeah, it was really rough. Really rough. I mean, I don't know if it was fabricated. Why would you want to go through all that hell? You know, people right. making fun of you, and they would bully the younger brother. And, you know, so I don't know. They were kind of the laughing stock. And then there were all these other people that were just so intrigued and wanted to see firsthand.
So did they make any money off of this?
I don't know.
From the movie and everything else? I mean,
I really don't know. I know, you know, I saw somewhere where she talked about her being upset that the movie was being made. And, you know, it's kind of dredging it all up again. And she doesn't like to recall that stuff. It's just really difficult for her. It still scares her. She feels, Janet is who I'm talking about, she feels like there's still part of that, like Bill Wilkins, perhaps, that follows her. And, you know, she experienced the loss of her 18-year-old son. He died in his sleep. Her younger brother, I think it was, passed away when he was 14 in the home. Her mom passed away in that same home in 2003 from breast cancer, I think it was. So a lot of loss, you know, a lot of loss for sure. And the mom, yeah, the mom stayed in that home even after the kids had moved out. And she still, until her dying day, said that, you know, the activity for sure had died down. But she knew that there was still someone there because she could feel somebody watching her, and she would hear noises from time to time. I mean, nothing like it used to be, but yeah, for sure.
Get out.
Get out with a quickness. So, right. Yeah, that's the Enfield poltergeist story. Creepy story. I mean, whether it's true or not, if that's fabricated, then, you know, applause to you, because that was well done.
Yeah, for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time. So, Marie, do you want to recap the story that you talked about last week? Because that was a weird one, too.
Well, that was these folks, I think, I can relate to a little bit more, because they only put up with it for a weekend and they got the heck out.
But my kind of people.
But they, it was some grandparents and their 12-year-old grandson, and things started flying around the house on that Friday. They called the police, and the police dogs didn't even want to go in the house.
Smart.
Right. You always listen to the dog.
Yeah, yeah.
You always listen to the animals. And I'm a firm believer that if our pets don't like you, then you can't be our friend.
Agreed.
Because animals know.
They do know.
They know. Yeah. So on Saturday, a reporter was assigned to the story. By the time word got out on Sunday, thousands of people wanted to come and see stuff flying around the house. And on Monday, the grandma and grandpa were like, We're out. They grabbed their grandson, moved away. An investigator, a paranormal investigator came in. Yeah, so the investigator said, you know, he couldn't find anything that appeared deceptive or fraud, and just chalked it up to one of the residents had the ability for psychokinesis, and which they can move stuff around with their mind, and they just were able to do it, not even realize they did, and didn't apparently have control of it. But when the family left, the occurrences stopped, and when the next family came in, there was nothing. There was no more strange occurrences.
That's so crazy.
So I'm going to tell you a secret because this just popped in my head. This is something I totally forgot about until just now. But when I was little, I guess I must have seen something on TV about moving things around and with your mind. So I remember as a kid, and I'm talking like maybe 7-8 years old, putting like a penny or something, I can't remember what, and staring at it and trying to make it move. I mean, I think I gave myself a headache trying to make that thing move. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, totally no gift here as far as that goes.
I'm not going to lie. I bet I still try that. I will my remote to come to my hand so I don't have to get up.
Okay. That's just being lazy. Yeah.
No, you know what? I got to say, I mean, I don't think I've tried it in a really long time, but even I tried that. I mean, who hasn't tried that?
Yeah.
Like, will something to move with your mind?
Okay, so I want to hear from our listeners who actually got it to work.
Yes. Or even a hilarious story of you trying. Please tell me I'm not, or we're not the only ones that have been the dum-dums to try
actually
this
stare
stuff.
At something and willing it to move, and it just sits there. And
I just, you know, everything is made up of energy. We are, and like everything we touch, we're all just vibrating at a different frequency, you know what I mean? Right. We're vibrating at a different rate, so it's all really just one thing. But you know, the table is not, it's just, I don't know, I guess I can't quite explain it, but it's all really one. They look like individual things because they're just vibrating at a different rate. So in my mind, it's not far-fetched to think that you as energy could move something else that is energy.
Well, it's a thing. They came up with a word for it, right?
Right.
So somewhere,
it's an actual thing, yeah.
I mean, they did it on the X-Men, so it had to be true.
And the internet says. For sure. Yeah, I have, you know, I talked in part one about my experiences with my necklace, you know, me leaving it on the teddy bear on the bureau to go shower, and then, you know, finding it sometime later laying under my bed on top of the Ouija board, and my mom's driver's license and her bank card. You know, she had it when she was out of the house, and then she couldn't find it, and suddenly there it is under the bed by the, and I mean, I don't even know how that happened.
There's no way somebody was messing with you.
No. I mean, nobody knew it was under the bed. It was in like a white gift box. So even if, you know, you could see clearly under the bed, but if you, you know, see that box, you would never be like, oh, I bet there's a Ouija board in there. Never. Creepy. I don't know.
Very creepy.
So yeah, those are some of the things we talked about, just to bring you guys up to speed from part one. Now in part two, we have some more stories. And I'm excited about these. So the first story I have is the legend of the Bell Witch. Have you heard this?
I know there was a movie made about it.
Really?
Wasn't there? Oh, I'm thinking Blair Witch.
No, Bell Witch. Although,
I'm thinking Blair. Yeah, Blair like in...
No, I want to say that possibly Blair Witch took some aspects of this movie.
Oh, okay.
I mean, of this movie, of this story, and used it, I want to say. I have to go back and reread that. I did a lot of research for this, so my stories may be coming together.
Yeah, my story involves Scooby-Doo and three ghosts. One was chocolate, one was vanilla, and one was strawberry.
Is that a banana split? Is that talking ice cream? So, the Bell Witch, the legend of the Bell Witch, it starts off with John Bell, who's a farmer from North Carolina. And so him, his wife, and his children move, they settle into Northern Robertson County in Tennessee in 1804. So they leave North Carolina and, you know, make the trek.
Okay.
To good old Tennessee.
And back then that was a trek.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So the place where they moved to in Tennessee, you know, is a farm consisting of 320 acres of rich farmland that laid along the Red River. So they lived a nice, quiet, peaceful life. And I think it was about 13 years, I think, that it was, you know, it was just good old life. Nothing to write home about. So they were members of the Red River Baptist Church, where John Bell became a deacon. The family grew and became, you know, somewhat prosperous. And, you know, they were just living the dream, I guess, you know, just happy and
living life right.
Yeah, happy and chilling, and everything was good. And then, on a dark and stormy night.
Was there a Ouija board involved?
When was a Ouija board made? I don't even know. Isn't that a like a Parker Brothers something? Or
no clue. I mean, Parker Brothers had to have gotten the idea from somewhere. Anyways.
There's silence because I'm afraid. So in the late summer of 1817, something happened that would change their lives forever. I know. Was that scary?
Very scary.
So the way the story is told is that some of the members of the family started seeing, this is just crazy to me. They started seeing strange looking animals around the property. So is it strange looking animals like, oh, I've never seen that, and it's like a possum? Or is it, that fox is looking like,
has two heads on it.
Right. It's looking real distorted.
Or is it the three-headed dog?
Right. Yeah. So I'm guessing that's the stuff they were seeing. It's some real far-fetched stuff. Like, where the hell are these two and three-headed animals coming from?
Okay, so they're seeing strange animals.
Yeah, they're seeing strange animals. And this started in the late summer of 1817. So they've been on the property 13 years now. Ooh, 13, magic number.
Ooh, that's creepy. Puts a twist on it.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if this started on a Friday, the 13th of the 13th year.
Ooh.
Right? I'm just adding my own stuff, guys. So then late at night, they started hearing knocking sounds on the doors. You're going to make the dogs bark. They start hearing all these knocking sounds on the doors and on the outer walls of the house. Later, the sounds were being heard in the house. Sounds of a rat gnawing on the bedpost, chains being dragged through the house, stones being dropped on the wooden floors, then gulping and choking sounds. Sounds dirty.
That sounds weird.
What kind of sex games were going on in there?
Who knows?
So the family, needless to say, was terrified. But the problem kept getting worse. And for the first year, they just kept it to themselves. And I mean, I don't know how much you would broadcast that. But then, you know, you told that story about the grandparents and the grandson.
But that was 1962.
I know. But over the course of like 3 days.
Yeah.
Suddenly it was like in the papers, and what, 10,000 people were there to see?
They wanted to get the heck out.
That's just crazy.
But and back then, what was that, the 1800s? I mean,
yeah,
1817. They would have got, there were deacons in their Baptist church. They tell that story, they're going to get kicked out.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
So they're going to keep that to themselves.
They did. But then things became intolerable. And John Bell, who is, you know, the father in the story and the deacon of the Baptist church, he finally ended up confiding in a neighbor, James Johnson, and he invited James and his wife to spend the night, because why wouldn't you invite your close friends to
they want
to
witness.
Be miserable? Right.
They want to witness that, you know, hey, my family's not crazy. Come
exactly.
See for yourself.
Exactly. So after several nights of witnessing these strange things, Mr. Johnson suggested that more people should be told, and a committee was formed and an investigation was started. So, yeah. The blind leading the blind, for sure. But, you know, why you needed to start a committee, like, I don't even know. I don't know what the purpose of that is, but...
Who knows? They needed to add some kind of legitimacy to it, probably.
Maybe so.
In their minds. So
it didn't take long for people to start coming from miles around to hear and witness the unseen forces that were terrorizing the Bell home, which, again, why in the H? Why are you going to go and surround yourself with that stuff?
Well, they didn't have Facebook back then.
Oh, true. No Twitter.
So, yeah, they couldn't get into other people's drama. No, so they had to...
No Netflix and chill.
Right. Yeah, there was no binge watching. This was their entertainment.
It was.
Other people's haunted misery.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. So, yeah, whatever was going on was terrorizing the Bell home. And it didn't take long after that, with all the people coming and the committee formed and all that good stuff, for the... whatever this unseen force was taking on enough power and energy that then it developed a voice. I know. Dun, dun, dun. We need sound effects. So when asked, you know, the thing takes on a voice. And so then they asked who it was and what it was. It gave all these different identities. So This thing is like lying up a storm, obviously, if it's, you know, it's like, oh, I'm Mitchell and I'm Barbara and I'm
or maybe Tubbs really and was. Crockett. Or maybe there really, you know, there really were a bunch of entities. Yeah,
possibly. So it once stated that it was the witch of a neighbor woman named Kate Batts. So, yeah. Like, what's up? Why are you blaming the neighbor?
Well, wasn't there a movie about that?
Really?
Well, it was the crazy, like, I can't remember the name of the movie, but she held James Caan captive. Katie Bates. That's who I'm thinking about. The actress.
Misery?
Misery. That's what I'm thinking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Tangent.
So basically, after this, you know, quote unquote witch said that it's the witch of a neighbor woman named Kate Batts, everybody started to believe it. And from then on, the unseen force was called Kate the Bell's Witch. So,
oh, okay. Yeah,
exactly. So that makes sense. So it's the witch that's like haunting the Bell family. So the Bell's Witch.
Got it.
Makes sense.
Got it. Okay.
So it seemed that Kate had two main reasons for visiting the Bell home. The main one was to kill John Bell, which, you know, of course, that's reason number one. Why wouldn't you want to kill Mr. Bell?
What did he ever do to her?
Well, apparently, you know, he didn't give her avocados. I don't know.
What kind of farm? What did he grow on his farm? Did he not share?
He, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't a very nice person.
Hmm. Who knows?
So for what reason? No one knows, which we've just identified. I mean, why would she want to kill him? So she never gave a reason why, which, you know, she's a woman.
We don't have to explain ourselves.
We are allowed to change our minds whenever we feel like.
That's right.
But that doesn't fly in my house, so. So the second reason was to stop John's youngest daughter, Betsy, from marrying a certain neighbor boy named Joshua Gardner.
Why, was Joshua a bad guy? Was he trying to protect, Betsy?
I mean, you know, listen, if it was Kate... Kate, go start your own farm.
Well, she can't. Go, she's on, like, the other side. Or she's...
Go, like, tend to your garden. Like, find something to do.
Her productive. Little ghost garden.
Her little ghost garden. With her ghost avocados.
Yeah. Her little ghost tomatoes.
Her little... ghost peppers. We are laughing. I can't even. Okay.
Oh my god, I'm crying.
Sorry, guys.
Oh my god, I am so glad I didn't have a cup of tea in my mouth.
Oh, my or god. In your hand.
Oh god, I would have spit that out through my nose.
Oh lord. You are welcome. Oh my god.
Oh my god, I'm crying.
I know. I can't even focus right now.
That was awesome. That was a good one.
All right. So, yeah, you can catch that show 5 days this week. So anyway, guys, over the next 3 years, Kate, the Bell's Witch, tormented the members of the Bell household. And I mean, this was like a daily occurrence, pretty much. And John and his daughter, Betsy, were the ones who received the worst of the physical abuse. So if I'm being physically abused and I know about it, you know, like, it's not like, you know, I said I woke up and I had those bruises on my legs.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that. Like, I don't know what was going on. But if I'm being tormented, why am I hanging out there?
Right. And I mean, back then you just couldn't get up and move like you could, you know, in the 1960s. You can just get up and leave. I mean, back then they... You know, they had how many acres and they built that house and mm-hmm. it was more difficult to relocate back then.
I mean, I would have lived under a bridge for all this junk. So, I mean, according to the story, Betsy had her hair pulled. She was pinched.
Ouch.
Scratched. Stuck with pins.
Ouch.
I know. Like, this witch was a witch.
With a capital B.
Yeah. Like, capital all letters. And she was beaten. So John Bell had started suffering from spells of swelling of the throat and often had the feeling of a stick being stuck sideways in his throat.
Ouch.
Which, I mean, come on, witch. Then came the twitching and jerking of the facial muscles. And Kate would blast him with curses and hideous threats during these spells. As time went on, John Bell became weaker and weaker. Kate was becoming well known and drew large crowds of people because, you know, people want to come see all the crazy stuff going on. I mean, why wouldn't you want to be in some like evil twisted plot like that?
Well, because back then there was nothing else to do.
Right. Like we said, guys, no Facebook, no Twitter, no Netflix and chill. It was just go see your haunted friends.
Right.
I mean, why wouldn't you? So she seemed to be really intelligent in many things, the Bible, people's pasts, and the future. And she could be in two places at one time, okay, miles apart from each other. So if that's not a witch, I don't know what is. And I don't mean a good witch.
She's a bad witch.
She's a bad witch.
Yeah, totally bad yeah. witch.
There's a lot of good witches.
Yes.
And she's not one.
No.
No. She's not invited to the
No.
club.
No.
So Kate finally accomplished her mission for coming to the Bell Farm. And on December 20th, 1820, John Bell finally died. So she succeeded.
I'm surprised none of the neighbors or church members or, like, you know, said, come live over here.
Well, it doesn't say it in the story, but it doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Right. That they didn't offer. Maybe right. they didn't accept.
Right. Because this is the account of, you know, coming straight from the family, I guess.
Yeah.
Or maybe Mr. Johnson, the neighbor.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. So it was believed that the way he died is from poisoning. And Kate took full credit for his death. And then in March of 1821, Betsy ended up breaking off her engagement with Joshua Gardner. So I guess, you know, she had had enough. And then for no good reason, Kate bid everyone farewell and promised to return in 7 years. And she did. In 1828, she returned for a few weeks, and during that visit, she ended up coming to the home of John Bell Jr. and had long talks with him about the past, the present, and the future, and she made predictions about the future, and she said there was a reason for John Bell's death, but she still never gave the reason.
Hmm.
So, you know, if she was a low energy, or, you know, and I say she very loosely because, mm-hmm. you know, he, she, it, I don't know.
Right.
But whatever this energy was, if it was a low energy, you know, they're liars. Misleading and all that good stuff. But so she did keep saying that there was a reason, but she never gave the reason for his death. And then she made another promise to come back in 7 years. And after, you know, she ended up coming back, and then she said she would return in 107 years, and that would have been 1935. But some people believe that she never left the area due to all the strange things that kept occurring in and around the town of Adams and the Bellwitch Cave over all the years. And so there's a lot of books that have been written. I think they do tours of that cave. I want to say, like, there's a cave that they call the Bellwitch Cave.
Huh. In Tennessee?
Mm-hmm. In Tennessee. So, I mean, what ended up happening in the end there? I don't know. She just, like, up and vanished and...
Well, maybe she finally crossed over to the other side.
I mean... Yeah, maybe. She got bored. She had a mission and she accomplished it. And then she's like, on to, you know.
Right. She took her peppers and left.
Right. She did. She spun the globe round and round and then picked a spot and went there.
Yep.
So, yeah, I want to say this is the story that, you know, Blair Witch kind of came from. They took some aspects from there.
Was there a cave in that movie?
Was there a cave? I don't remember.
Remember, I didn't see that movie, so
no, I know. I don't remember. I don't remember there being a cave, but there was, you know, the witch, obviously, and she torments and kills people.
Mm, which follows this story.
Right, exactly. So yeah, that is the legend of the Bell's Witch.
Ugh.
I know, super creepy. I mean, I think obviously the physical abuse that Betsy endured, and even John, you know, to some extent, because he got his fair share of stuff, but then like the strange looking animals, no, that's it for me, sir. I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out.
That's all I need to hear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gone. No. Out. Sayonara.
Not for me.
Arrivederci.
I can say this in two languages. So, what is your fun and cool story, Marie?
So, this poltergeist story again happened in Florida back in...
Again with Florida?
I know, right?
What the...
Right?
You know we live here, right?
Well, I think that's why I focused on that. Try to keep it local.
Nice. You're brewing it all up. If our lamp flickers again...
Oh, yeah. It did flicker last week. It did flicker last week. 1967. That was a very good year from what I understand.
So. Was that your year?
Yeah.
That is a good year, though.
So, this haunting happened over the period of a month And it mysteriously started and just as it mysteriously ended. And it took place at a Miami business called the Tropication Arts, where they sold souvenirs. And it was very well documented. So it started out as a beer mug would fall and break. And the owners just blamed the staff, you know, quit fooling around. And the staff swears it wasn't them. And over time, it became more prevalent. And then the owners believed, okay, that something's going on here. And there were aisles in this warehouse. And so something would fall, they would go investigate, and then something else would fall in another aisle.
Ooh,
but
creepy.
Everybody was together. So now they're looking at each other. Okay, so something's going on here.
Something's afoot.
Yep. So ghost investigator Susie Smith came.
Sounds like a fake name.
I know, right? And she stayed for nearly a month and documented over 300 incidents that occurred.
In that one place?
In that one place of things being,
good
being
Lord.
Knocked over.
How long was she there? Does it say?
24 days.
Oh, 24 days.
24 days.
Maybe I should listen.
So, you know, a box or two would just fly off, you know, just fall off the shelf.
They don't just fly off the shelf.
And
oh, that box just flew off the
shelf. Yeah, that box just went from that shelf onto that floor. and so there were try to have the poltergeist break things upon request. So they would put a Coke bottle up in a spot that nobody could reach it. You know, nobody could go up there without being seen.
Mm-hmm.
And they said
something. Oh, like they made sure that it was high enough. So
right. It was in plain sight so that if somebody climbed up there and tried to knock it over, they'd see it.
Right.
And something would happen to distract them and they'd turn around and the Coke bottle was being knocked over by itself.
Okay. So number one. And maybe the only number that I'm about to bring up. Why are you toying and like trying to get this thing to respond to you?
Investigating.
That is insane.
Right. They're trying to figure out what the heck is happening. They're still trying to prove, you know, is somebody doing this? Is it one of the coworkers? Who's doing this? Who's messing with us? But they would witness items like quivering for a bit and then falling to the floor. So it would shake and they said some items would actually lift up and then fall to the floor.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Creepy. Creepy, creepy, mm-hmm. Creepy.
Super creepy.
Yeah. Invisible fingers.
Maybe it was an invisible elbow. You don't know.
Could have been. Oh, can you pick stuff up with your elbow?
I can knock it over with my elbow.
So a magician named Howard Brooks basically called BS. He says, everything that you're talking about, I can do with magic and sleight of hand. So,
Howard.
Yeah. So he goes in and investigates and searches and witnesses boxes weighing 4 pounds, you know, falling off the shelves. And he finally caves and says, the things that I saw, I can't make happen through sleight of hand. There is no magic trick for this.
Well,
so he's convinced that
maybe Howard couldn't do it, but I bet Chris Angel could.
Oh, he might. He might.
Like literally the only magician I could think of right now.
So parapsychologist W.G. Roll from Duke University. Oh, I'm sorry. W.G. Roll from Durham, North Carolina, investigated the case along with Dr. Pratt from Duke University. And the University of Virginia, they said they found no evidence that the phenomena were caused by normal means. And Dr. Pratt said, I consider the case worthy of careful studying and reporting in the scientific literature of parapsychology. So what they said, and what you had mentioned earlier, is that most poltergeist cases usually is centered around a person, and that poltergeists haunt people instead of houses.
Mm-hmm. That's everything I've read, too.
And however, It's usually around a female, but in this particular case, they were able to tie it to a young man, a 19-year-old named Julio. And the rest, the rest is mostly legend instead of being studied like the activities were.
I think they're profiling.
They could be. So a 19-year-old young man named Julio, because when he left the company, it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So they started trying to follow Julio to his jobs and said that actually paranormal poltergeist activity followed him. So they think that he had, that he was able to move things with his mind and was not able to control it. So they think it was
so
him. They think,
then every employer in Florida put the word out, don't hire
don't hire Julio. Poor Julio. They said, and this is really far-fetched for me, but they said that they tracked him down to an auto service station that, and he was held up at gunpoint. He was shot twice in the chest and lived.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to study him, and he was like, nope, he doesn't want to deal with the questions and the weirdness anymore, so he refused.
Well, I mean, the getting shot in the chest twice, right?
Yep.
I don't think that's so far-fetched. I mean, haven't you seen all those really cool medical shows where people are like impaled with the craziest stuff or shot in the right in the head and they're still talking, and I mean, they end up being just okay. If you're meant to be here.
You're meant to be here.
Yeah.
And,
so,
if he could move stuff with his mind.
Right. Right.
Maybe he willed the
maybe
bullets.
He like pulled a Matrix. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Or like Wonder Woman, and he had those bracelets on. Right.
Pew, pew, pew.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't think that's far-fetched, but what a crazy story.
Yeah.
And I'm a little upset that they say that these things happen with girls around because, you know, what the age is that? Because both of your stories had boys.
Right. Right.
However, let me just say that I'm about to tell a third story, you know, third in our two parts of Poltergeist. And all of my stories have had girls. You can't trust the girls. But I'll say again, don't have a teenager. Just get rid of them.
Well, they don't come out as teenagers.
Well, maybe you hand them off to someone for those teenage years because they're dangerous. Well, that was a cool story. And, you know, how did they account for all that broken merch? That sucks.
His telekinesis.
No, I mean, like, at the end of the year.
Oh.
What a loss.
Yeah.
Because of Julio. Nice going, Julio.
Yeah, down by the schoolyard.
We're never going to finish this.
Because we crack each other up too much.
Oh, my God. Oh, what a fun, dark, and stormy night. Well, Julio, wherever you are, I hope you're doing really well, and I hope you like our podcast.
Yeah. Hi, Julio.
Thanks, Julio. So the last story I have is the Amherst Mystery. Have you heard of this?
Oh, is that like the Amityville Horror?
Not even close.
Oh, okay.
No. That is not poltergeist. That was just straight up evil.
Like, that was exorcism type stuff, right?
No. Amityville?
Amityville.
No, that was
possession.
Yeah, more supposed possession, or maybe not even possession. I don't know. Maybe so.
I don't know. Like I said, I didn't see the movie.
Well, apparently it was like the oldest son that killed his family and said, you know, he was told to do it, if I remember correctly. I've seen the movie and the remake.
Ugh.
I know. So the Amherst Mystery, I thought this was a cool one. I have heard the story before and I didn't really remember it. And I didn't remember till I started reading this. But so it's one of the most frightening and highly publicized cases of activity where there was a haunting, well, paranormal activity that was haunting the people of Amherst, Nova Scotia, called the Great Amherst Mystery. And it was a powerful unseen force that tormented, hurt, and traumatized someone by the name of Esther Cox and her family for a year starting in 1878. So I like to go with stories from the 1800s that are nowhere near Florida. Like my little friend here. So basically, I mean, they were cast into a hell they couldn't escape from that included embarrassing scrutiny and mockery by skeptics. And there was all kinds of intense paranormal activity that was witnessed by the neighbors, scientists, clergymen, doctors, investigators, you know, Esther Cox and her family. I mean, their lives were changed forever. I mean, how would that not change you? So in contrast to the haunting of a physical location, these hauntings were malicious, and they followed Esther Cox, who is, how old do you think she is, Marie? Is she a teenager? She's in her teens. Yeah, she's 18 years old when this was going on. I know. So this is like Julio, where these malicious hauntings followed her from place to place. And then one day they became so severe that she had to leave her home for good. So it stands apart from other hauntings because of the credible witnesses they had, which I think in any of these haunting stories, you know, everybody thinks that they have credible witnesses, which if you have a witness, you got a witness. What makes them credible?
Versus incredible?
Never gonna finish. So here is how the story goes. So it begins in August of 1878, which I believe is when John Bell's story begins.
Oh.
Late summer. It was August of 1817 or something. I don't remember. Anyway, so it begins in August of 1878 and lasted into the last half of 1879. So Esther Cox lived with a number of relatives in a cottage house in Amherst. And reportedly, the precipitating event took place when Esther was the subject of an attempted sexual assault with a gun by Bob McNeil. So Bob McNeil, what a D. So it turns out that Bob was a family acquaintance and she had developed a fondness for him. And despite rumors that he was of poor character, I mean, you know, sometimes the heart wants what it wants. And
she liked bad boys.
Yeah, evidently, you know. Netflix and chill. So she was traumatized by the assault and her behavior started to change, and her sisters would witness her crying herself to sleep, and she just kind of fell into a deep depression. So, you know, I can only imagine what an event like that would do to you.
Right.
And she didn't tell anybody.
Right. She really liked him. He hurt her.
Right. He took advantage.
She feels too ashamed to tell anybody.
Exactly. So the sisters assumed that she was all emotional and, you know, and a wreck because of the falling out with Bob. And, you know, again, like I said, she hadn't told anybody. So what else would they think? They think it's just, you know, teenage girl being an emotional wreck.
Right.
So not long after that happened, you know, that event with Bob, these really strange things start happening. And Esther and her sister Jane, who, you know, they shared a bedroom together. And, you know, I don't want to say, you know, because like you don't know that.
Well, back then, I mean, that was common.
No. I was saying like, I said, oh, you know, because they shared a bedroom. But you didn't know that because I hadn't told you that yet. So they began to hear some strange rustling sounds from underneath the bed. So to me, what would I do? I would get the H out of there, because why would there be rustling noises? Not rustling, rustling from underneath your bed. There wouldn't be. There's no...
You wouldn't look underneath the bed and say, hey, who's hiding under there? It could have been your cat. Could have been your dog.
I'm going to say that wasn't an option here. Otherwise, they would have said it. So they hear these sounds coming from under the bed. And at first, the noises were subtle. And they're thinking like, oh, it's a mouse, which, you know, totally possible.
Sure.
Totally possible. But I imagine that they would have checked and there was no mouse, ghost or otherwise, hanging out. You think there are mice come back as ghosts?
No.
No?
No.
You don't think there are any earthbound mice here?
No, I don't. I think they're smart. I think animals are smart enough to go to the other side.
Yeah. It's they're like, oh, there's the light.
Yeah. It's like, oh, light. I'm going there. No, it's us humans that are too
stuck here.
Oh, there's a light. No, I'm.
I'll wait for the next one.
Right. No, I'm going to stay here. I don't want to go in that. I don't want to go that way.
No, I'm with you. Okay, so no ghost mouse.
No.
So after that, things did start to intensify quickly. When on subsequent nights, the noises would be accompanied by intensely frightening experiences that would prove this was no mouse. So during the first several nights, Esther's body swelled up in agony, causing her to feel like she was going to explode. And then her body changed from burning hot to frosty cold in like seconds.
Isn't that called the gout?
Or hot flashes?
I don't know. Well, she was only 18, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she went into spasms and trances, and she said things that she later couldn't recall. Blankets and pillows flew off the bed repeatedly, even after family members replaced them. And writing appeared on the wall above Esther's bed saying, "Esther Cox, you're mine to kill." I know. So rude.
That's very rude.
I know. I mean, number one, what a nasty message. Secondly, why are you writing on the walls? I mean, that's a hand slap for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So the noises were getting louder, like claps of thunder that appeared to originate from under the bed.
Ooh, that's creepy. That's creepy.
Dude, I mean, that thunder we heard, can you imagine that sound coming from under your bed? Not even a little. No. Like it coming from outside and we both jump like 7 feet. Not cool. So the sounds, sometimes under the bed, sometimes it was like directly on the roof. I mean, things were really intensifying. So initially, the witnesses were Esther and her sister Jane, who she shared the bedroom with, and their other sister Olive and her husband Dan, Dan's brother and Esther's brother. There were also two young children belonging to Olive and Dan that were living in the house. So although they didn't want to bring any attention to themselves for fear of mockery, which, you know, in every other story we've already heard about how people can just be super insensitive and, you know, if they don't understand it, then they're going
to. Right. They didn't want to draw attention to themselves. Mm-hmm. They just want the problem to go away.
Yeah. So they wanted to keep things quiet. So they ended up calling in their family doctor to see if he could help. So he came in and witnessed some of this stuff, and he witnessed the writing taking place on the wall, the loud claps, what appeared to be intelligent rappings in response to questions that were asked of the, you know, quote unquote ghosts or, you know, whoever was inhabiting the space. Neighborhood residents found out about what was going on. So just like in the story with the grandparents and the grandson,
everybody came over.
Yes. Everybody starts coming over because the noises got so loud that you could hear all these really loud noises coming from like 200 yards away.
So the neighbors became witnesses.
Right. So that's like, you're standing two football fields away and you can hear all this noise. I mean, it's not a band. It's
right.
It's, you know, some really intense haunting activity going on. So the doctor did describe, he says that it's as if someone was banging on the roof with a sledgehammer. So it was the Great Amherst Mystery was starting to become really well known around the town. And then people, you know, like in your story, start coming around so that they could see things flying through the air and, you know, levitating and all that good stuff. So things in the house obviously did start to move by themselves and fly through the air, or get this one, manifest out of nothing, like right out of thin air, something would appear. Isn't that crazy?
Nuh-uh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So household items would disappear from one location and then reappear in another, and fires would erupt mysteriously. And I mean, this is like, this story is so intense. All the stuff that took place, I just, like, it was exhausting to read it. I'm like, they went through all that stuff.
Yeah. Get out. Run.
Yeah. Yeah. So from time to time, the haunting activity or the, you know, the paranormal activity would stop or slow down, but it would always start up again. And often it followed Esther wherever she went. So she began to hear voices and see the entities that tormented her in various ways. And they frightened her and also harmed her physically. So, I mean, life had really just become so difficult for the family. And with everything that had been going on, it forced Esther to leave the house. So she was taken in by a family, and that was super kind of them. And they allowed her to work in their dining saloon. But the hauntings had followed her. So townspeople witnessed, you know, all kinds of crazy paranormal activity in the saloon. So get this. A knife mysteriously flies through the air and stabs Esther. And someone pulled it out of her body, and then it flew back into the same wound. What the mother loving S is that?
Poor Esther.
I know. I know. So scientists, clergymen, doctors, I mean, all kinds of people came to investigate the hauntings. And a well-known reverend visited and witnessed a bucket of cold water on the kitchen table start to boil.
Ooh.
I know. What the crap? So then there's a Baptist clergyman named Dr. Edwin Clay, and he defended Esther after investigating and drawing the conclusion that she was not causing the manifestations herself. How he came to that conclusion, I have no idea. But he spoke about the authenticity of the case at many lectures where crowds of people gathered to listen. So the people in her town, like I said, gathered at her call at the cottage where she was, where her family was, inside and out, trying to get a glimpse of the objects flying through the air or hear the thunderous booms or hear the, you know, the rappings on the wall or wherever, you know, those knocking sounds were, and would try to communicate with whatever entities were there by asking questions and asking it to rap back, you know, knock back. And she even, I mean, ugh, this girl went through it. She really did. In June of 1879, Walter Hubble, investigator and author, spent 6 weeks in the home of Esther Cox to document the haunting. And he claims to have been the victim of his own paranormal events that took place at Esther's house. And he witnessed many violent occurrences with Esther. I mean, so it seems like everybody, I mean, even the townspeople that are coming, like everybody's got their own story and can validate that there's legitimate like haunting activity going on, which is really, you know, I don't know. It's just crazy. So in any event, each time Esther returned home to the family cottage, the manifestations intensified. And while she was working for someone named Arthur Davis, his barn burnt down. And he accused Esther of arson, for which she spent a month in prison.
Oh, no.
When really it was, you know, if the story is to be believed, then it was these entities, one or more, that, you know, caused this to happen. So, and for no good reason, after that, the events slowed down. They subsided. They slowly just started to go away. And she went on to live her life and married twice. She had two children and you know, life just carried on.
So she got to live happily ever after?
I guess. I mean, I don't, it doesn't, you know, I couldn't find anything that really followed her too much after that. But for everybody else, they seem to have, you know, a story where those kinds of things just follow them, which is just so creepy. But I do know the movie, An American Ghost Story, I think it's called, was based off of this.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was, I thought it was a pretty good movie. And in that movie, I mean, I won't say what the ending is, but similar stuff. I mean, this girl is being tormented by some unseen force, and it was a creepy movie. And those kinds of movies tend to be the ones that creep me out the most. They tend to be my favorite ones, where you can't see what is tormenting the people in the movie.
The poltergeist?
Yeah. It's so creepy.
It is creepy.
I love it. Like The Others? I'm assuming you haven't seen that with Nicole Kidman?
Oh, no.
I like that movie very much. I really do. There's something about not being able to see it that is just so terrifying. Like there's nothing. I mean, in that movie in particular, you can see like a door close or open, or like that's it. That's the extent of what you're seeing. They never show, you know, what's causing the haunting, if you will. So it's creepy. I know.
Creepy.
I know. So we are at the end of part two of Poltergeists. I had so much fun covering this stuff. I really did.
Yeah, it was interesting.
It was really cool to research and to find these stories. And I know they've been told so many times, but it's still fun. We've never told them.
No, I mean, I didn't know these stories.
Mm-hmm. I had heard of the Enfield Poltergeist and the Esther Cox one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd heard of the Amherst one. I'd heard of both of those. The Amherst one, like I said, I just didn't remember it until I started reading it, but really good stories. And then the Bell's Witch, I mean, spooky.
Yeah, scary.
And Julio.
Down by the schoolyard.
I know. I mean, get it together.
Right.
So yeah, this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. If you guys want to hear more content like this, please let me know, because that was a lot of fun, I gotta say.
That was
fun. I learned a lot. And like I said, I mean, in the course of the research, I ended up with even more questions than I started with.
Well, it's always fun to laugh till you cry.
Yes, it is with ghost peppers. Thank you again for joining us, friends. Don't forget, we have a couple of fun things coming up. This weekend, this very weekend, it's finally here, and we're doing a paranormal investigation at Pensacola Comic Con with celebrity guests, Ghost Brothers, and we couldn't be more excited. We're also being joined by Don't Break the Oath podcast in a couple of weeks, all the way from the UK, and we're super pumped to welcome them. If you're not familiar with them, please check them out. They're absolutely listen-worthy if you enjoy the paranormal, UFOs, and so much more. So Don't Break the Oath podcast coming in a couple of weeks. And as always, you guys, love and light to one and all. You mean the universe to me, and I'm sure to Marie, because we work really hard on this.
Yes.
And thank you for everything. We really love you guys.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. And good night.
Good night. Dark and stormy night.
His hair, son.
At last, saved after all these years, stuck up this cursed mountain, licking moss with only a crow for a friend. How'd you find me?
Just walking the dog. Need lift back down?
Room for a crow?
Adventures never far with the Land Rover Discovery Sport. Now £339 per month on Land Rover personal contract hire.
Oh, heated seats.
Land Rover. Above and beyond.
Initial rental £4,068. 48th month term. Subject to status. 8,000 miles per annum. Conditions apply. Offer ends 31st of March. Participating retailers only. Such Land Rover offers.